Today's special interview with Mike Boogie is sponsored by Invoice2Go. You know, Mike Boogie says that you can bounce checks in the Big Brother house, but if you're a small business owner, you don't want people bouncing checks to you, and you also want to get checks from people, but it can be such a pain in the neck to do invoicing. That's where Invoice2Go comes in, because it can help you deal with the frustration of creating invoices and trying to stay on top of all that paperwork. It'll save you time where you don't have to waste hours every week. You could be watching the live feeds or something better, because Invoice2Go will help you take care of invoicing in just minutes, because you can use it on mobile with the Invoice2Go app, which makes it really easy to send invoices on the go with your smartphone, tablet, or computer. And it's also really intuitive that you can invoice your customers right on the spot as soon as you finish a job, where it's fast and it's customizable and it'll help you stay organized. Invoice2Go helps you keep track of cash flow automatically, so you'll always know who's paid and who still owes you money. So it's free to try. Go to Invoice2Go, that's invoice, the number two, go today, and create your first three invoices for free. It's an offer you can't and shouldn't refuse. And for a limited time, you'll get 50% off Invoice2Go for an entire year. Get Invoice2Go for as little as $9.99 a year using the promo code ROB. So to redeem this offer, download Invoice2Go from the App Store on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device, or visit Invoice2Go.com. That's invoice, the number two, go.com. Use promo code ROB to get Invoice2Go for as little as $9.99 a year. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sisternoon here. We've got a special podcast today because I'm joined here in the studio by, dare I say, a Big Brother legend. Here he is with me, back in the studio for our, can I officially call it our yearly check-in?
Exactly.
Here he is.
Annual checkup. It's like going to the doctor. We have a bell?
Yeah, you'll get one. That was preemptive
cool.
Strike.
Very exciting.
Yes,
very exciting.
The great Mike Boogie is here. All right, Mike, we are days away from the finale of Big Brother 17. Can you believe this?
Yes, another fun-filled summer over at the Big Brother house with the hamsters, and it's coming to an exciting finale. And another winner will be crowned.
Another winner will be crowned. Somebody else will join the winner circle. Do you do anything special every time a Big Brother winner? Like, do you have a winner's email?
An anointment
list?
Ceremony?
Yes,
no,
a brunch.
I stay very much out of the Big Brother fray. It is always slightly interesting to me. I know the thing is, when people get out and there's the little 5 minutes of hoopla, and people try to extend that for a while.
Yes.
I'm always, I kind of stay out of that because I know how that script ends.
Yes.
It's never good. One person, I like to say one person leaves with the check and 15 others go to therapy. And and the winner probably does too, but yeah, so.
Do you feel like, has that changed over the years, or do you feel like it's exactly the same now as it was, you know, whenever 10 years ago, 5 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 10, 12 years ago, you actually did get a little more fame because reality television wasn't so saturated, and you remember that time. And you know, nowadays, it's just a blip on the radar screen, and, you know, there's always enough fans, rabid fans, and charity events to perpetuate the myth that you are famous.
Yeah.
And so people will hold on to that and attend those and stuff, but... You know, it's fun to get recognized at the airport, but at the end of the day, there's really nothing that's going to come of it.
Like the other night when Austin is talking about, he's giving his speech and is talking about like, hey, put me on the Bold and the Beautiful. Like, what do you think when you hear stuff like that?
Well, at least he picked an attainable goal, you know, because they actually do put people on the Bold and the Beautiful quite frequently. And that's realistic. But if you think you're getting on Life in Pieces coming on CBS this fall, you're sadly mistaken. But it was quite shameless. And yes, this is coming from me. I guess it just seems a little passe by this point. But, you know, it comes off a little weak. But, you know, That's an obtainable goal, an attainable goal.
All right, let's talk about the people that are left in the house, but mostly I want to hear you talk about Vanessa, and I would just love to get your take on this, because we've had this all season long with Vanessa of, like, she's really, really good at the game, but then she's also at times overly aggressive and extremely overly emotional. So have you been impressed with Vanessa this season?
So Vanessa and I have a lot of mutual friends.
Okay.
I play a lot of poker. I have a house in Vegas.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, I have pro poker players living in my house. I've never met her, but we have a lot of mutual friends. And I was really excited when she got selected. And I thought to myself, there is a skill set that goes with poker that'll play well in there. And she's done great. I tell you, my one problem with Vanessa, particularly from an entertainment value perspective, is she doesn't really own it. You know, like, I do agree she's been overly aggressive at times that I thought would backfire on her,
mm-hmm.
but she always has wiggled her way out. So I do think she's a deserving final three participant. I just think from an entertainment perspective, I wish she would go in the diary room and kind of own some of her big moves.
Yeah. She tends to come away from it saying, you know, like, oh my God, I'm the most honest player in the house and everybody should trust me. And she's telling that to us sometimes. And I think that that's one of the things that I know that certainly, like, you and Will and lots of other people throughout the history of reality TV that I feel like have really resonated with people. I'm doing this to all these people in the house, but I'm being honest with you at home.
Exactly.
I'm telling you exactly what's going on. Rob Mariano, another person who, you know, that's his calling card too, in terms of just like, here's what's really happening right now. Here's what I'm really doing.
Thank you for echoing my sentiments. I just wish that she would let the viewer a little more in on her, you know, her insight and her journey and her mm-hmm. path, because then that really brings the people along. I feel as if she's playing a season where people can vote from the outside or something, in which this is the year where there's been no outside influence, except the America's Choice at the end. But, you know, there was really no one in there who kind of embraced like a villainous role. And, you know, I think that's really lacking this season.
Well, what's the concern, do you think, for somebody like Vanessa? Is it, I don't want America to dislike me? Is it, I don't want to be seen negatively in the poker community? I'm afraid to tell production what's really going on, or some combination of all of it?
I think, you know, as someone who's never participated in social media
mm-hmm.
and the just the way things are in today's world, I honestly think she, you know, she's been in the public eye a little bit, more so in the poker community, but
mm-hmm.
so she already knows what it's like to log onto a computer and have people say bad things about her. So I mm-hmm. think she's trying to sort of, you know, hedge against that a little bit and say, okay, well, I should come off as nice as possible so I can minimize that fury from the keyboards of the world. So I think that's part of it. I think of anyone in there, she's had the most experience being slightly in the public eye.
Mm-hmm. How confident are you that she's going to walk away on Wednesday as the winner?
I am 95% confident she's going to walk away the winner. Do we talk about where they're at this minute, or do we not talk about things that haven't aired?
You know what? If you want to talk about that, let's wait a little bit.
Okay.
And I'll let, because there's going to be a lot of people that want to hear from you that are just watching the TV show. And then we'll talk. We can talk about live feed stuff.
So I think that she's in good shape with either person she's playing against. You know, it's weird. It's like you'd automatically think, don't take Liz because she's automatically got two votes. But if you don't take Liz and you're the one that kicks her out, you have a very good chance you're going to have three votes no matter what against you. And then you have to get everybody else. So she's in a weird predicament. In some ways, I think it might be best to not win the final HOH.
So you feel like that she should go ahead and potentially leave it up to either of the people. You know, it's so interesting. And this is something that we talk to Ian a lot, and we do a lot of podcasts with Ian from week to week. And he has a quote that he says that, you know, you had said during Big Brother 14 about how in the modern game, competition wins are very important. You need to have that on your resume. And Vanessa has plenty of HOH wins. But why do you think that is, in terms of like where Johnny Mack was going out of the game and it was like, yeah, I don't have any HOH wins. So people were like, oh, well, he, you know, obviously he can't win the game. He's a goat because he doesn't win any HOHs. Why has that evolved this way?
First off, great Johnny Mac impression.
So Johnny Mac impression.
But secondly, I think that especially for first time players, it's quantifiability. You know, you can quantify and say, I won three POVs, three OHOHs, and that person only won two of each or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the social game also has carried a negative connotation since All-Stars, which was the term floater. And it sort of really entered the lexicon when Rachel overused it her season. And so, you know, sometimes people who have really good social games, it gets diluted by that negative connotation that you're not a real player if you don't win things.
So, do you feel like Rachel Riley was like a real paradigm shift in Big Brother, where it's like floaters get your life vest and comp wins, right? That became more important than the social game?
Right. I mean, I think that the comp wins were always the most important, even though you saw Will Kirby do it, win without it and get to the final four with me without it. But, you know, it's almost impossible not to win these days without, you know, winning some competitions. And I think if you're going to win them at the end.
Yes.
Because what have you done for me lately? And in that regard, I'll contradict myself from an earlier point, which is, you know, if Vanessa does win the final HOH and controls her own destiny, she'll have a very good final two-week resume.
Yeah.
I don't know the stats, but
I think it'll be five HOHs if she wins that final.
It'll be five total.
Yes. She's won four.
That's tough to beat, especially in our game versus your game, so to speak. You know, in Survivor, where you can win multiple immunities in a row, you know, that's one of the wrinkles of Big Brother that's very interesting, because you don't know if you want to win because someone's going to stay and be mad, most likely.
So here's Vanessa sitting there, and you feel like she would almost be better off with those two, because I kind of feel like she's sitting pretty against either of those people with her resume. Do you feel like the jury potentially is anti-Vanessa and that she really needs to curry the favor of whoever goes out in that third place spot?
You know, some of your listeners, probably all of your listeners, could offer a more informed opinion. But as someone who strictly watches the edited television show, no, the other night, Shelley was very vocal, and it was clear she was voting for Vanessa no matter who was sitting there. And it's clear that Austin wasn't. But I tell you, if you know, we're not there with them right now, spending those hours upon hours upon hours upon, you know, she had a lot of time without Austin there to gain favor with Liz. And if they got a little girly girl thing going on and Liz forgives a lot of what Vanessa did, I feel like Liz could go in the jury house and actually flip her sister in Austin.
Well, here's the thing, though, that this finale is all playing out.
Oh, that's right. That's right. She doesn't
Wednesday.
Go to the house.
Yeah.
I forgot that. See, that's why you are the host of the show and I'm a measly guest. I forgot about that aspect. Well, let me back it out then. If she's gained favor with Liz, even though she might not be able to sway Austin, I mean, look, they're going to communicate during the commercial break before they vote, or so, you know, if they see she's going to, you know, Austin will basically do whatever Liz wants, I think. And, you know, Shelley is a very popular girl amongst the stragglers, I'll call them. And I almost feel like it doesn't really matter what the Aust twins do.
Yeah, I really do feel like Vanessa has this with either of these people. It'll be interesting to see. I think her versus Steve would be a lot more, like, I feel like if it turns out that it's Vanessa versus Liz, it's just like, you could turn the TV off at that point. You know, Vanessa's got it. I don't think that there's going to be any chance that Liz can do it, even with Austin and Julia on her side. Like, maybe if it's Steve, maybe you say Austin and Julia get Liz to flip also against her, and especially if Vanessa kicks Liz out of the house and it was like, hey, we had a final two.
Right, exactly.
And maybe, and, yeah. But I think it's still a stretch.
I you know, I'm very curious to see Vanessa's final speech.
Yes.
In some ways, I feel like she's a great orator, but in some ways, I'm really afraid for her that she won't own it.
Yes.
Much like we talked about, she doesn't own the diary room. I don't know if she'll own that final speech like me, like your frequent guest, Ian Terry, you know, where you just come out and say, yeah, I did this and own it. And I always hate that so much, whether it's Survivor or Big Brother. I hate it when they don't own what they did. And it's a little trickier with first-time players because you have to deal with the bitter pill problem. But Vanessa certainly has the skills to give a speech like that.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll vote for the best player. Cause I really don't like it when the worst player wins. And I know you don't either.
Yeah. So how about Steve this season? Cause Steve is somebody that we, from the beginning of the season, said, okay, this is the new Ian. On the first episode, Clay says, oh, well, this is 100%. This is Ian. You were somebody that worked with Ian. He was on your team, and he was somebody that you helped transform. And Ian, I think, evolved over the course of Big Brother 14. Now, Steve's in the house. No Mike Boogie there to really take him under his wing and give him some pointers along the way. And so what have you thought about Steve this season? And do you see the Ian parallel?
You know, I really saw the Ian parallel until I watched him try to do math the other night.
Yeah.
Because it was weird. He was trying to defend his guess of 601, I think it was, and said that he dropped a zero. But that was almost an even worse guess. I mean, it would have been a losing guess.
Yeah, he would have lost.
So it's like, Ian certainly never would have made that mistake.
No.
Yes. I mean, obviously we all know the prototypes. I'm sure when you watch Survivor, especially in those earlier times, and you know, you kind of go, okay, there's the next Rob, there's the next Boogie, there's the next Will, there's, and Ian is such a specific type, you know, and I think Steve is maybe a couple years older, but, the key difference is something you said about the evolution of Ian. You know, Ian was even so far more anxious and quirky and socially inept. And then at the end, it was like, I always liken it to the movie Primal Fear when Ed Norton, you know, says that thing at the end of Richard Gere. And, you know, when Ian gave that final speech, I was blown away.
Yeah.
Steve, I think would give a pretty decent final speech, albeit with the manic delivery. He's been an interesting player. I mean, I like that character. I kind of like the fish out of water that has to fit in with the high school kids that he didn't fit. Because of the cast always have to have a certain look, categorically speaking, there's going to, you know, it's like a cool kid group from high school. And like when the nerd has to fit in and assimilate, and Steve's done a good job of that.
Yeah. And so here he is also at the end of the game and potentially with going to the end with Vanessa. Do you see a parallel there between where Ian was and with Vanessa as like the Dan also, where I feel like with Big Brother 14, you had Dan and you had Ian and you had Danielle. And then here we have in this season, we have, you know, Liz and Vanessa and Steve. And I feel like that's sort of like an interesting like one-to-one that you could do with the people,
you know,
that are there.
I'm a little biased in the opinion because I was there for the Dan and how he got Ian, you know. I mean, I honestly think, you know, Dan and I were kind of neck and neck, but Dan had the social, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm trying to be a little diplomatic. Dan's nerdier than me. So Dan kind of gravitated towards Ian. Dan put in the time to hang, whereas I was just palling around with Frank lifting weights and stuff. Dan was perfectly happy playing little kitty games in the pool with the ducks, and you know, him and Ian bonded through that. So I've not seen that connection with Vanessa and Steve. I've just sort of seen Steve just sort of glom onto whatever seemed good at the time.
Yeah.
And maybe a feedster, maybe you saw more than that, but I mean, Ian and Dan were really tight.
Yeah.
I mean, hours upon hours of just spending time together. So I don't know that Vanessa and, you know, Dan plays video games all the time. Like I just, not that Ian plays video games, but you know what I mean? There was just some more similar,
more common ground there.
Yeah. Like I could never see Steve playing in a poker game.
Right. Johnny Mack went out earlier this week and he was a lot of people's fan favorite for the season. We'll see what happens ultimately with the fan favorite award. What was your take on Johnny Mack? Because Johnny Mack was somebody, as we mentioned earlier, you know, he didn't win a lot of the competitions and people wondered really what his strategy was in the game at times.
I'll tell you what I loved about Johnny Mack. He was the one person this season that understood the entertainment value of the diary room. And, you know, he would tell them, the people in power, yeah, sure, I'll do anything. And then he'd go in the diary room and tell us, the viewers, yeah, they're the, you know, head of household. Of course I'm going to do what they want, you know? So it's like, I felt like he was the only one that sort of really let us in on the thought process behind everything. And he grew on me.
Yeah.
When he first was in there, I was just like, oh my gosh, this guy. And it took a while, but he eventually grew on me, and I was kind of sad to see him go. I know that it would have caused quite the controversy in that he was voted out, and then, you know, he came back and almost won. And it, had he been sitting there in the final three now, that would have been
would that annoy you?
You don't know, because there's so many wrinkles along the way and so many stupid things that put people in the position that why should that be any different?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least he did an endurance comp that had some, you know, I don't know. I'm a little partial to the physicality of some of the competitions, but it's like, look at Steve, you know, Steve is sitting there, I guess, basically because he couldn't add, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, what, it totally is influenced by one little stupid thing. You know, I think that's, you know, that's an interesting Big Brother and Survivor. If, you know, just to keep Survivor in the conversation, it's like, you have to really earn it at the end there, you know, Survivor. And it's like Big Brother, it's like this stupid thing, you know, Jeff Schroeder, you know, one of the most famous people from Big Brother. It's like that clown shoe that he couldn't find or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's why, like, when people win and people go, oh, they're the worst winner ever, or they don't deserve it. And it's like, it's kind of like, you need that little piece of luck along the way to win usually.
Sure. Yeah, you got to be lucky and you have to be good.
Yeah, you can put yourself in a position, but any little competition at the end could dictate everything.
Did you second guess the decision that Johnny Mac made at the moment that he did it, where he voted out, I think it was on Tuesday night, he decided to vote out Austin instead of Steve. But in hindsight, you could say that it would have probably turned into then by Wednesday night, Johnny Mac and Vanessa versus Liz and Austin, as opposed to Johnny Mac and Steve versus Vanessa and Liz.
You know, I don't know. He was in a really tough spot.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a really tough spot because you can't help but look at that and then go, well, everybody wants to play in the final three. And Vanessa would probably get a lot less intimidated by the other two as long as she was in the final three.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have to think, is it really me and Vanessa versus those two? Or is it me and Vanessa? Or is it me versus the three of them?
Yeah.
And that was a consideration that I'm sure entered his mind. Because, like, if you know you're going to be in the final three, you have a lot more control, you know, assuming you can play for the final HOH. So he was in a tricky spot, and you know, I think the greater conversation is why did the cast as a whole wait so long to go with the Oz twins? Because they waited like 2 weeks too long, and then the math got funky.
Yeah. The night of the double eviction, the second double eviction, we did a show that night, and I was very worked up of why didn't Steve and Johnny Mac take out Julia when she was up on the block, and a lot of people have defended that move, and a lot of people were upset about
the quick refresher she was up against.
So it was Julia up against Meg.
Okay.
And the house, yeah. and they ended up voting out Meg there, yes. And then James went out in the second part of the double eviction, and then I believe that Liz won the HOH in the second part, so people said, okay, yeah. Well, then if you would have pissed off Liz, then she probably would have voted out Johnny Mac or Steve in that spot, and you could debate whether or not Liz would have been too frazzled to have won HOH after her twin sister got blindsided.
I totally agree. I mean, here you have Meg, who's the least threatening person left.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even since the beginning.
Right.
She was just so non-threatening, physically, mentally, everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she would be a dream drag-along person. So, yeah, I agree with that. And Liz probably would have been a little flustered had her sister gone, because clearly that bond is so strong. And I totally agree with you. The live evictions, the double evictions this year, I think you'd agree, were just horrible. They're usually the best episodes of the season, and Big Brother really gears up for them, and you know, the fans love them. And it's like, I've never seen live evictions with so little going on while they were happening.
Yeah.
Double evictions, I'm sorry. You know, like that first one that Steve won, the first double eviction, and then like nobody even talked to him.
Right.
He should have gone at that.
And he put Meg and Jackie up on the block.
That one he absolutely should have gone at the twins. And if Steve loses, you know, that that I think will, if he has to go back in time, that will haunt him. I just, you cannot play with fear, you know? I mean, it's innate, but you have to, and that's why James was my favorite player. Like, I think Vanessa's going to be the deserving winner, but James is my favorite player because he had no problem staring people down and just, and then when people would bring him stupid deals, he'd be like, are you on drugs?
Yeah. Now, James earlier this season, he famously conjured you up and talked about how, you know, Boogie said that you can bounce checks in this house.
Right.
Did you feel like that he correctly understood what you meant when he said, I believe that was when he made a deal with Shelly and to keep her and Clay safe. And then he put them up on the block.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I heard him say that, and clearly he must be a longtime fan of the show and stuff for at least several years. And he was great. I loved his fearlessness. I really respect it when people play the game without fear and without regret. And he just seemed like someone that I just wish he could have stuck around a little bit longer and would have made it really interesting, especially with the Oss twins. And he just didn't get that.
Do you think he got too distracted by Meg and chasing her around the house?
Yeah, I think he got a little distracted. It seemed like his final week in there, I think he went more into a floating role, if mm-hmm. we were to keep that term going. And it seemed like, you know, he kind of did make himself a little bit of a target with the couple. Why him and Meg were more of a target than the three people in the other alliance is shocking. But if you're not even going to be, you know, messing around with the girl, you definitely needed to create
the friend
separation
zone. Right.
Yeah, the friend zone. If you're going to be stuck in the friend zone, don't become a showman's target that isn't even a showman.
Right.
So, yeah, I felt bad for James. I felt like he would have been fun to watch down at the end.
A couple of weeks ago, Les Moonves was interviewed
yes.
about this season. Or he was interviewed about his 20 years as the head of CBS. And they had asked about, are you still involved with the micromanagement of the, you know, signing off on the Big Brother cast? And he said, yes. And he said, and by the way, we did a bad job with the cast this season. Do you agree with that?
I agree that collectively it didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a weird thing. It's a hard job they have, and you never know. You know, the base of the game is always going to give you an acceptable result.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an annuity at this point. The ratings aren't, they don't fluctuate too much. The demos that they hit.
Yeah.
You know, are
but
good.
They've been strong, right?
Yeah. So it doesn't really matter, but I think they tried to take advantage of the Caitlyn Jenner factor. We'll just mm-hmm. call it that. And she was a miss, you know.
So, yeah, but I felt like she added a lot to the show the first couple of weeks.
She did. I think she was a miss in the sense when the going got tough.
Yeah, the exit was not great.
I mean, that is a week of just not speaking, which is not good for television. I think that they had the usual suspects in there, but I did feel there was the Amazing Race couple was a total miss for me.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, you know, the Big Brother takeover, I still don't know what that was. I mean, I loved Gronk being on there, but, you know, I did feel overall that...
Are you going on the Gronk cruise?
No, I don't think I'll be on the Gronk party cruise.
With Meg?
I no longer imbibe alcoholic beverages, so I don't think I should go on the Gronk party cruise.
Yes.
But yeah, I never criticized the casting, but I think it was a miss this year. And you know, I thought that article was really interesting when I saw him say that, because I'm very surprised he even signs off anymore because of the trust they have in Allison Grodner and Rich Meehan.
Yeah, but it really was surprising because I think that most people were happy with the cast overall. Maybe some of the decisions that were made, but I felt like that people were, for the most part, happy with this cast, at least through the first half of the season. I didn't really hear that complaint from many people.
I think some of the bigger personalities went out early. Like, I was really disappointed that Jason went out. Davon, you know, although, you know, she definitely, you know, fits a role that goes out early. You know, the outspoken gal. But, you know, it's, I don't know. You know, it was... You know, there was the redneck, and then there was the Captain America, and I mean, they hit all the roles, but you're always going to miss, you mm-hmm. know, there's always going to be a few, and this year, there I just felt like there were several.
Okay. You also were part of the oral history of Big Brother that was recently put together. What did anything surprise you that came out in the oral history of Big Brother from the Huffington Post?
Nothing surprised me from the Huffington Post. It's funny because I told the writer I love that I love that quote, if I may, at the risk of self-aggrandizement. I love the quote about one winner leaves happy and the rest go to therapy. And I said, that's going to end your article. And when he's speaking to that many people, you know, and then it was what ended the article. So that was fun for me. But I thought it was very comprehensive. For someone who's played the game a few times, there was nothing to really shed light on. If you were a casual fan, I thought it was a great article. If you were a rabid fan, it didn't.
Yeah, not a ton of new information.
Not a ton of new information whatsoever. It's very beginner's dummies guy. Big Brother for dummies.
Now, go back to the whole thing with the twins and the Austins. How surprised are you that going back to week four, when it was like, okay, that Liz and Julie are going to come into the house, that people, one, they let them come into the house, and people never really, and even before Austin was really in the mix, that people didn't...
They weren't threatened by it.
Yeah.
How could you not be threatened by, you know, it's one thing when they've had twists, with... the daughters and the lovers and the this.
Mm-hmm.
The one most unbreakable bond, not even a sibling,
yes,
is twins. They, again, categorically speaking, they tend to have a really close bond. And the fact that people were not threatened by that was shocking to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm kind of rooting for Liz so that they can make fun of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just shocking. And then they see her getting with Austin. And that didn't seem that threatening. And then you're just going to let the three of them coast to the end. Like I said, I think they figured it out a couple weeks too late. And I don't know. She might not win, but she might leave with 50 and knocked a lot of people out along the way.
Now, what did you think of the game that Austin played over the course of the season?
I'm not really an Austin fan. I think that I was actually more concerned for him in the beginning with his friendship with Jace.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy was a toolbox 101. And, I was like, wow, this big hulking 6-foot monster. I don't even know how tall is he. He's
tall. Yeah.
He's tall. I was like, he's got to find a way to find somewhere to hide. And he did. And he kind of was coasting along. And then when he got with the girl, I said, well, you know, that's a great maybe second, third place game. But, you know, it's really tough to go, because at some point you're going to be the target. And, you know, one of them may win. I mean, Liz may win, but it's really hard to take, because everyone's so hypersensitive to the showmance thing now. And you know, if you want to talk about Clay and how stupid he was to walk
sure,
away.
Sure.
I mean, Clay, and, you know, it's like, here I am talking about social media and people's hyper awareness of going in the show and kind of what character they're playing and all these things. And it's like, you know, do people, even new players, really still think that, like, you're going to go in there, you fall in love, and then, like, I mean, because like, he truly walked away, because mm-hmm. I mean, he would have stayed if he put in 1 ounce of effort. And there's a way to do that and not make it look like you're lobbying too hard. And he, like, truly walked away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wish them the best of luck in the real world, but, like, come October, I don't think she's going to be in Texas or wherever. You
know? I don't know. That one I don't know about, like, cuz I kind of feel like both of them are, like, willing to turn the key on that. Like, I thought if anything that was going to happen was, like, okay, this guy, he's a, you know, 23-year-old good-looking guy, he's going to get out of the house.
Is that how old he is?
Yeah, he's 20. Yeah, he's a young guy, I think. And I think that, you know, and he'll get out of the house and there'll be lots of women around.
Sure.
And he'll say, you know, Shelly who? Doesn't seem like that's the case. He's, got like Clelly t-shirts on his website and stuff like that. So I think she's
big sellers.
Yeah, it must be. But I think she'll be what is she? She's going to, be the one
she's
that says
in her
no.
She's 30s, right?
Yeah, I think she's 33. And so she seemed like she was more into it than...
Is he an employed young man?
I don't know. I don't know too much about his background.
Cute girls in their 30s like to have men who have jobs.
Oh.
Because when you're lying around with nothing to do all summer, those muscles go a long way. But, you know, no haterade, but sometimes girls in their 30s like guys with jobs.
All right, so who do you think has the better chance of working out, Liz Stin or Clally?
Where's Kelly? Wait, no, what's her name?
Shelly?
Shelly. Where's Shelly from?
Shelly is from Georgia. She's in Atlanta. He's in Texas.
Okay, so Georgia, Texas has a shot, and then we have Miami and L.A.?
Yeah, he's like out here.
So cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
I could see Liz moving to L.A. to try to whatever, we'll just say. I'm going to go with Liz Tin or whatever.
Yeah, I'll take Clelly. We'll have
a good shot. The geography kind of works. The cosmopolitan couple and the, you know, southern whatever, prom king and queen.
Yeah. So going back to Austin and everything that he's doing, what do you think of the Judas stuff?
I was not a fan of the Judas stuff. I saw where he was trying to go, but I don't think it played. I think he was dealing with sensitive, villainous material there that just came off creepy.
Yeah, just, when you say sensitive material, what do you mean? Like,
well, I just, you know, religious zealots and and it's like, I don't know, there was just something about it that wasn't whimsical and playful.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came off weird to me and kind of predatorial. And I think part of it is just his size and his look. And you have this cute little blonde girl next door, and then you kind of have this big caveman. And I don't know. It's women in my life that watch the show.
Yeah.
We're not fans.
Not fans of Judas.
I'm sure he thinks he's like, you know, America's sex symbol or something.
Yeah, well, I didn't think that this Liz Tin is going to be like, you know, the second coming of like, you know, Jeff and Jordan and Brendan and Rachel and our big fan favorites.
I do not see that in their future, but only time will tell.
Yeah,
I hope they enjoy Wednesday night.
You know, this
long drop off the cliff on Thursday.
Speaking of Austin, he had said on the show on Wednesday night about how his job now is to make sure Vanessa doesn't win the game. He's out to try to poison the jury. And I'm trying to see, this was a question that I had asked one of the listeners for a question, and this was something that came up, and I want to give the person credit who did it. But the question is basically, how can that actually happen, and does that happen in Big Brother? That is the jury tampering a thing that really goes on from in terms of the players? A player comes into the jury with a grudge, with an axe to grind, and can start flipping votes.
I believe that there can be jury tampering. I've never been on the jury, so I've never experienced it. But you know, when you kind of think of it, bird's eye view, you know, you have the people, they're in a more liberal social setting. There's mm-hmm. a huge monkey off their backs. There's alcohol. There's the same cutoff from society. So you still have to be very social with each other to interact in this new house
mm-hmm.
for a period of time. And I'll say this. I was thinking to myself, if that guy was my enemy and he said that on the way out the door, I wouldn't feel great about it. But in some ways, I think it could help Vanessa.
Yeah.
Because I think that he's going to come off like a bully. And I think Shelly and her vehement support of Vanessa on that episode, it was clear that she's Team Vanessa. And I think that those girls and those people, I think there'll be a bit of a backlash against the Oss twins.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not there. I don't watch feeds. I don't know the inner machinations of all the relationships, but I will say from a viewer's standpoint of an edited TV show,
yeah.
I kind of think it's going to backfire if he tries to be that bully.
I don't disagree. And I also feel like it really helped her the other night when he said, well, you can't win. You obviously know you can't win now. You just evicted me. And I think that people like to oh, really? She can't win? Okay.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I think that if he forces that issue too hard, they might do it to spite him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were like sitting on the fence. I mean, I guess the key thing here to me is that James and Meg will vote together. And I think they have a better chance of being in there, being social with Shelly. And it seems like Becky will just do what that little crew wants.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you get James, and I feel like it won't matter what Austin wants.
One of the things that's been brought up a lot this season is this idea of, you know, a woman's never beat a man in the final two. As a man who sat with a woman in the final two, do you get the sense that this jury might feel like, okay, if it is Steve versus Vanessa, let's, you know, girl power, let's undo this whatever curse that no woman has ever beat a man in the final two?
Well, I've never heard that stat. I didn't even think about it. I'm pretty gender blind. You know, I just think that, you know, I guess it would be cool, but I don't know. I've just never really thought that it mattered, and I've never even considered that stat.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's pretty equal, if my memory serves me correctly, guys to gals winning.
Yeah.
Obviously who they're facing off with.
Yeah. Yeah. That these, you know, yeah, but I don't know, for whatever reason, when it's a woman in the end with a man, the jury seems to either hold it more against the women, or for whatever reason, the women have only beaten the women so far.
I mean, one strategy that Will and I employed, just from a sociological standpoint, is that, you know, men will innately get along with men a lot quicker than women will get along with women. You know, women tend to be quicker with envy and jealousy, and, you know, she's got bigger boobs or better hair or her nails are, you know, da, 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 da. And I don't think guys, you know, have those factors as much. And so, you know, I think it's kind of easier to sway women to a man's side. And yeah, I think maybe overall, I've never really thought about it. It'd be an interesting little case study.
Mm-hmm.
Going back in votes and counting the votes and stuff. I'm sure Ian could offer.
Somebody could.
Historian.
So in terms of this season compared to last season, did you have a preference in terms of Big Brother 17 versus 16?
Yeah. You know, I'll say this. I am going to enjoy the final episode because it's not so much a foregone conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a clear cut how it was going to go down at the end last year. And, you know, I love Cody, but it just, you know, you just knew he was going to hand Derek the game. And it was very satisfying last year because the best player won.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed the final few episodes this season because there was just much, it could go in so many different directions. And I just didn't feel that way last year. Collectively as a whole. Yeah. I mean, you know me, I'm kind of like the guy's guy, and I kind of like the guy alliances, and they kind of bully people around, and they kind of played like that last year. I love the Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to those boys. And I did like last year. I'm a New England guy, and so I was a huge
Derek fan.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this year, I couldn't really, you know, I was kind of rooting for Vanessa, but again, because she didn't really understand. She didn't own it in the diary room and stuff. I never was like really behind anyone this year. And last year I was really behind Derek and the Hitmen.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it plays out for Vanessa on Wednesday night. All right. Let me ask you some of these questions that I got from the listeners of the podcast.
Okay.
Bob Fallon asked, who outside of the final three do you think you could have coached up to improve their game the most? Is there somebody that you feel like that
question,
could have been
Bob?
Yeah.
Wow. That is a really, really good question. I mean, I feel like I could have helped so many people in so many different ways, but I kind of feel like Becky maybe.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like Becky.
What would you have said?
Well, I mean, with Becky, like, I wouldn't have had her win an HOH so soon. You know, that kind of altered her course.
She seemed frustrated that she hadn't won one yet.
Yeah, like, if you're not on people's radar and you're not winning, just wait till you need to win. You know, you don't need to win. And if you know, I always say, like, if you can just get along socially, you can go to the halfway mark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be too overcommitted in any one direction, and you can go to the halfway mark, and then you can start making moves. So when she won hers, it was like the beginning of the end. And, you know, obviously Clay, I could have coached him a lot better as soon as I saw him messing around with Shelly. And, Jason, I would have loved to have gotten Jason and just calmed him down some. And obviously, I say this with a grain of salt because it's always easier to play the Monday morning quarterback.
Yeah. You
know, I have a lot of hindsight to work with mm-hmm. here. And so, yeah.
Yeah, but it was frustrating, I think, this season because I felt like about 4 or 5 weeks in, it was like, okay, this is really good. This is actually, and when they were doing Battle of the Block, it was even getting to a point where it was like, okay, we have the sixth sense, but the other side of the house, the people not in the sixth sense, if they mount up the counter alliance, this is going to be really great, classic Big Brother, two sides of the house warring, this war of attrition, one side wins HOH, the other side right. wins HOH, but the other side just never got it together. Yeah. And they went out of the house one after the next between, you know, Jeff, Jason, yep. Jackie, you know, all, you know, ultimately one after the next. And yeah, and then you had Clay and Shelley who were sort of like the two casualties from that sixth sense.
Yeah.
But then, and they sort of like took all of the blood from the Vanessa going after Jason thing. And they
I
were
really
like the scapegoats.
I really wish Shelley had stayed that week.
Yeah.
I think the show and the game would have been very interesting because I felt like she could have been more of a leader.
Mm-hmm.
She needed a little more time with Clay out of there, and I think she could have done some damage. I was really excited when she stayed the week right after, but then she was gone the next week, and I just – there's just no real leaders over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought James could kind of assume that role, but he didn't really do it either, and I don't know. It was just very disjointed this year. It just felt really – I mean, just, you know what said it all for me is when the four evictees came back into the house to play that game and everybody liked everybody.
Yeah.
You know something's going wrong when everybody likes each other.
Yeah.
More villains next year, Rob and Cass.
Well, how do you cast for villains? Is it more like is that person in casting or like, can you read like up front who's going to be the villains?
I think so. I mean, the casting is such an exhaustive process.
Like when Austin's going through casting, it's like, oh, wait till you see me in the house. I'm going to be Judas. They're not going to know.
I think that's the thing. I think people act more villainous, and then when they get in there, they're not as much as they say to get on the show.
Yeah.
So I think that's what he was supposed to be, but he didn't. He came off as creepy, but not a villain.
I think it's a fine line to try to find that person because, you know, you have all this stuff from like with the fallout with Big Brother 15. So it's like you don't want to just totally find a despicable person.
And also and put 14, we had Willie Hance.
Right.
He got kicked out.
So it's,
yeah, so I think you're right. They're a little sensitive to that these last few seasons.
It's like
seasons.
A fine line. You want the person with that's like morally ambiguous, but like not somebody who's intolerant. You know, right. It's a very tough line to sort of find right. that person. That's
well,
like,
you want your dream is Dr. Will.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like the next tier down, which is like a little despicable, but both of us own the villain thing. But the dream is Dr. Will, a charismatic, good looking person who
yeah.
you love to hate.
Your ideal, of. Like charming sociopath.
Exactly.
Is what you're looking for.
The charming sociopath. Like, exactly. Right.
Like the handsome
Jesse,
serial killer.
Jesse
right.
kind of has some of that qualities.
Yes.
A little more corny, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's you know, harder than it looks.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's since the big racism problem, they had to be a little safer.
Okay, this is a question I'm sure you get it every season. Paul Schneider wants to know, who would you pick from this season to join you and Dr. Will in Chilltown? is there any candidates?
There's definitely no candidates this season.
Not that, Amazing not, Race Jeff?
Not, no. No, that guy was one of the biggest busts in Big Brother history. I have no idea why he was on there, but... you know, Vanessa is definitely someone, mostly because of my poker interest, that I'd like to befriend after the show, but I'm going to have to wait till the hoopla dies down. But no Chilltown participants.
Okay. This is one from John Cortez. Says, Derek and Tony from Survivor said that they treated their gameplay as a business trip. Do you feel like it's the same way for Vanessa? And is it safe to say that people that treat this show as a business trip tend to win? As opposed to... hey, this is going to be a fun experience for me. I'm going here for work.
I agree that it should be a business trip. And I feel like you don't typically see people go there and happen to win. I mean, there are Jordan Lloyds of the world, but Dan, Evil Dick, me, Derek, you know, the winners tend to be someone with a very clear focus and goal in mind. Vanessa in business trip is funny to me because... you know, she missed the entire World Series of Poker. And I don't want to say she would take a pay cut because it was, speculative, but, I was a little surprised to see her go in there considering when the show films. That's when you can make the most money in poker. But, so for her, it's
so
like
why
she
did
almost
she do
took
this?
A pay.
Yeah.
I feel like Vanessa did it, obviously, and I hate these two words. She's covered it enough this year. Game theory. You know, I think for her, it was like a social experiment and a challenge. I mean, look, the funny thing is she probably is leaving with the $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
But, I guess also, in the poker world, you can get sponsorships. And so things like followers and exposure are valuable to her in 2015, and she can monetize that quickly. You said before that there were Clelly t-shirts being sold. Well, that's great.
I said they were being made.
Being made. everybody tries to be the squirrels trying to get a nut, but Vanessa actually has a platform to which she can build off of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this will help a little bit. Even though I don't think it's the most synergistic show and to go with poker. I don't feel like poker players are a big component to the viewing audience, but I feel like she has a head start that others do not.
I have to ask you about what did you think of the luxury prize of going to go with Frankie Grande to go to the concert?
I thought the luxury prize was pretty interesting. I wondered why the suite was so far from the stage.
Yes.
I particularly enjoyed Frankie, thinking he was one of the backup dancers. And I thought it was a thrill for the girls. I would have just mucked it. I would have given that to somebody else. That seemed like torture to me. But it also seemed like a long day for an hour and 45-minute concert. I had to be there like 3 hours before and 2 hours after. So good for them. And you just can't deny, Frankie's participation. And he's worked it and turned it into a lot for himself, too. So big Frankie Grande fan.
Wow. Then this is a question from Jonathan Shapiro. Where would you rank Vanessa in terms of if she was the winner of this season? I know you don't keep like a chart or anything like that, but do you think, is she one of the top tier Big Brother winners? You feel like, is she more in the middle?
I'm not big on like the greatest ever and everything. The circumstances are different every year. There's the luck factor that we've talked about. I think that she's been a very, very compelling character. And, this question might be answered a little differently after what she did, convincing Julia to pick Austin to play against her in that veto competition. I mean, that was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew that they were vulnerable to that. I would put her in the top tier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never say Will or Dan or Derek or whatever, but I think she's in the top several winners. She assimilated every week and always had a clear purpose.
Is she the best female winner that the show has had?
Yes, I agree with that.
Best asterisk female. If she pulls it off.
If she wins, Vanessa will be the best female winner, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. David Baltazar wants to know, since Steve would most likely evict Vanessa, should Vanessa out herself as a multimillionaire to Steve and argue that no one will vote to give a millionaire more money?
I love that idea.
Yes.
I hadn't thought of that. What's that person's name?
David Baltazar.
David Baltazar Getty. What's up? That is an excellent point. And I think why that would resonate so well is Steve being a young, impressionable guy that she really lays it on thick, that she's this poker mega millionaire, and he thinks she'll say that, on the finale. Because the thing is, she could do it for him and not do it for them.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
Do you feel like the way that Big Brother has sort of accelerated this final two speech process hurts the game at all? Like, it feels like from where it started, it was more like, okay, sit down and ask questions and have a little bit more of a forum. Now it's really much more rushed, I feel like, in the finale. Do you feel like that hurts?
Yeah, I feel like I'd rather see two less people and have it every season. I'd rather see 14 contestants and just, or even you know, this year was what, 17?
17.
Yeah, it's, I think that they rush it too much at the end. Like every night this week has been an eviction. I think it used to be too long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be like 4 or 5 days where the third person would go out and the two would have to sit in there like I did. But I think live is too quick. I think that there should be a day for that person to go and gather some information from the jury house and glean something that they could use to.
Yeah, why do we have to do it live?
Why do you have to do it live? Because I think that final night just seems so rushed too.
And it seems like they're like reading a question. It's not even like their question.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
yeah, I agree.
So I feel like you don't get that moment where it's like, you know, Austin calling out Vanessa. Unless
the other thing, yeah, I think that the two finalists too should have more time to think about that final speech. And because, you know, it's like you may not know if you're staying or going, and then you're staying and you're kind of flustered, and you should be able to give the best foot forward, you know, the best speech possible for something that is arguably going to be the biggest moment in your life.
So from your perspective, tell me, who are the all-stars from this season?
Vanessa.
Okay.
And that's it.
Vanessa, that's it. No Johnny Mac?
See, if they did it, assuming they did it again, like, when is it? Because Johnny Mac tomorrow is an all-star.
Mm-hmm.
3 years from now, do you remember Johnny Mac?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like Frank. Do you remember Frank in 2 or 3 more years? He's fan favorite, competitor. He's a lock 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of depends when they do it. But I think Vanessa first or second, maybe even third, she's someone that would be in that conversation.
Do you think she would do it again?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Vanessa's ego is pretty big.
Wow.
And I'm almost positive she would do it again for the challenge.
Ken Crowner wants to know, do you think that most jury members respect strong strategic games or strong social games more? I feel like I would personally vote for Vanessa, but in Survivor, players like her struggle for votes. Is it the same in Big Brother?
Ken Crowner, I think that people will always vote competition wins first. They're just more quantifiable. And the social game is really hard to own, and everyone shies away from it because of the negative connotation of the word floater. And if you have a great social game, it gets watered down with the term floater, and you can thank Rachel Riley for that.
I really feel like, you know, going back and thinking about it in this conversation, I really feel like that's the, you know, if you were going to put it on the graph, I think that's the point where I think that this changed a little bit.
Yeah. Not to be the guest that then harkens back always to their situation, but like Danielle Reyes, I remember when she voted for me in All-Stars, she gave this big long thing of why, who she was voting for. She didn't say my name yet, but she just said, and this person had this, this, and this, and ultimate floating. And it was like a term that was pretty disrespected then, but like a few years later when Rachel, who's so popular and such a big character and had that famous quote, grab your life vest, floaters, you know, it just really took on a whole new life. And yeah, I think they're always gonna, it's just so much easier to say I won 5 of these competitions.
Yeah,
and Vanessa's resume will be pretty impressive if she gets there.
Tamir Markowitz wants to know, would Boogie ever play Big Brother again, and would he play Survivor?
Tamir Markowitz, after All-Stars, I would have said probably not play again because there was nothing to gain. And then I went back and they had the twist. And now I kind of have that thing again where I have to admit, just, you know, depending what was going on in my life, most likely I would play again. And Survivor, yeah, I would love to be on Survivor.
Because this is the era of synergy between the CBS shows.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have any false notion. I know Survivor, they've put a couple of Big Brother on along the way, but not often. Amazing Race tends to go towards the couples.
Yeah, I think you'd be good on Survivor.
I'd love Survivor. I think I wouldn't win because I'd be too hungry and grumpy.
Yeah.
I get grumpy easily when I don't eat. I would be a little baby out there because I'm not handy. I'm not, I like the creature comforts of, you know, things like beds and pillows and
And I almost feel like that your style of play would probably be more conducive for Survivor than even Big Brother, because I feel like where Big Brother, you could really, you know, they could just put you up on the block and target you. Like, I feel like that's a little harder to do on Survivor. It needs, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to play Survivor for the physical aspects. I think that, like Rob in some ways, you know, we kind of have that middle ground where we're just fit enough to help the tribe, but not too threatening. Mm-hmm. When you get to the individual portion. So yeah, it would be fun. I don't know. I've thought of applying sometimes, but I know for a fact that the casting doesn't necessarily look too highly upon people who were on other shows, and you know,
look,
you never know.
Hayden Moss was on. They had an amazing racer win Survivor.
Know that.
Yeah.
When was that?
It's a year ago.
Oh, okay. I missed that one.
So it's
an amazing racer won Survivor.
There's amazing racers in the Big Brother house. Well, there's Survivors and Big Brothers on Amazing Race. So it's the era of synergy.
Maybe me and Rob will go back on Survivor.
Sure.
He'll go back on Survivor.
Sure.
You never know. It'd be fun. I love the style of both, the competitive nature of the shows, and you know, it's just there are institutions at this point in reality television.
Okay. Tell me if you feel like we've already covered this, but Ryan LeBlanc wants to know, what did Boogie think is the most notable way that the game's evolved since he first played? We talked about the whole oral history of the show.
The way the game has evolved is just so different from when I played you know, there was no veto. So when I played the first time in 2001, if you got put up against a pawn or someone that was popular in the house, you were absolutely screwed. You were done. You had to sit there for a week and you knew you were done. The veto provided such an interesting wrinkle. I will say, I feel at this point, it sort of jumped the shark in a lot of ways. I find the Battle of the Block, and every year the outset of the show is just so confusing. I think it's hard to get new viewers because it's like, it's really hard to understand in the beginning. And I don't really think it needs anything else. I feel like the veto is enough, and I really don't care for Battle of the Block.
Just go back to Big Brother 2 and talk about that, because this past summer was the 15-year anniversary of the start of Big Brother, Big Brother 1, and obviously next summer will be the, you know, 15 years since Big Brother 2. But coming into Big Brother 2, you had to not have known anything about what you were going into. It's like, okay, here's this thing, Big Brother. Nobody really loved it, or it was on TV and people like were at best like lukewarm about it, but you're going to go into it, but it's going to be different this season. Did you have a good sense of what it was going to be like to go into Big Brother 2?
Honestly, I made this is how old I made VHS tapes.
Sure.
For both Survivor 3 Africa and Big Brother. I happen to know some Big Brother casting people, so my tape got to the top of the pile. I didn't really care about the game at all. I was coming from the frame of reference that I was an actor in LA. I already had an agent. I was watching people like Jervis Peterson and Colleen Haskell and you know, all Rob's friends, and all these people getting Hollywood opportunities, and they were like selling insurance or going to fashion school in other parts of the country. And so I was like, well, I have this head start. I'll go on this show. You know, unfortunately, Big Brother 1 flopped so badly. I mean, it started off with monstrous ratings. This was actually back when people watched TV, for you youngsters out there. And it just waned every week, and then they reformatted it, and I think it was great for Big Brother as a show, and clearly 15 years later, it's still going strong. Mm-hmm. But for people, you know, going on a reality show and then becoming famous as actors and stuff, you know, Colleen pretty much was the end of it. When Colleen starred in the movie The Animal, it was just done. They weren't going to give people opportunities anymore, even if you were already an actor. So it was a roundabout way of answering the question. I mean, I didn't even care about the game. I really didn't care. I was like, if I last one day or the whole time, I am going to make my mark. I'm going to act crazy. I will be unforgettable. And, you know, everything happens the way it's supposed to happen. I was unforgettable enough to come back and get selected for All Stars.
But did you have any idea about what you were getting into, other than this is a thing, it's going to be on TV? And
yeah, I mean, I knew the format had changed, and you know, I was, yeah, I didn't really know how every week it was going to work with the evictions and stuff. And the contests were so rudimentary that year. You know, I commented before, like, we would have a head of household, like, where we'd float like a Tupperware bowl across the pool and you had to throw CDs in it. I mean, those were the kind of competitions. So it's funny. It's like nowadays they just do the same competitions with different set dressing.
Yeah.
So you can only be so innovative in the size of the backyard versus, say, a Survivor where you have unlimited geography.
And did you have any sense during Big Brother 2 that it was being received better than Big Brother 1 until you got out of the house?
I had thought that the show would be bigger. Mm-hmm. I remember when I came out, I had a frame of reference. I understood Nielsen ratings and I expected viewership to be bigger.
Yeah. So you were disappointed with the numbers when you came out.
I was disappointed with the numbers. I remember it was about 10 million people were watching and, you know,
this is coming on the heels of like Survivor Australia
exactly.
was Survivor like 40 million.
Yeah. Exactly. And I had already known that of the two, I had gone on the worst one and the ratings were going to be lower, but I thought they would be bigger. And then I remember at the home stretch of our show, Survivor Africa was premiering.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys was on there that was in the finals of Big Brother, this big black guy.
Clarence.
Yeah. Yes. He was at the final nine guys for Big Brother. And so, you know, I watched that with particular interest and that was still a monstrous show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I always felt like the bastard stepchild of the CBS family that, okay, well, kind of went on the wrong show and whatever. But they changed it for the good. I mean, it's still going strong. They've added wrinkles along the way. Some twists work, some didn't, but it's not going anywhere.
Does it blow you away that both of these shows are still on the air now, you know, 14 years after when you originally were on?
I think it does blow me away because these shows, you know, always have a shelf life, but I always had a good business sense and the economics of television. And, you know, I know what we all get paid and, you know, as long as the viewership stays at a certain level and the producers are willing to work for a certain amount of money.
Yeah. Do you think that it's mostly because of the economics of it? Or do you think that in addition to that, because like, as we mentioned with Les Moonves and the same guy being in charge of this network for 20 years, this is all on his watch. If eventually Les Moonves retires or steps down or whatever, and somebody new comes on, do you think that these shows will continue to run, or do you think that whoever comes in after Les will want to come in and do their own thing?
You know, it's a multifaceted question because you never know if someone wants to make their own mark and it's like out with the old and with the new. You know, the thing is it all comes down to money. You know, in relation to you take the Big Bang Theory and what you have to pay Kaley Cuoco and Jim Parsons and Johnny Galecki and all those cast members to produce a half hour television versus
make 10 seasons of Big Brother.
Exactly. You know, as long as there's a new busload full of wannabe reality people who are going to sit there for $1,000 a week, you know, that's always going to work. If 7 million people are going to watch and it's the people who spend money, the advertisers are going to put the money there and the show's going to be on the air.
Yeah.
And we've seen when people have tried, you know, it's extremely expensive and risky to launch new programming. They know when they put Survivor on what they're going to get. Even though it's one third the audience of what they used to, they know what they're getting. And that predictability is gold. And then you have these producers like, I don't know Mark Burnett's deal, but like, you know, he's probably not even there anymore ever. And then, you know, as long as you have these producers that are willing to do the show and, you know, with Big Brother, it's Alison Grodner and Rich Meehan, you know, and they are, you know, have kids and they know, okay, in the summer I'm going to work a lot. And then in the fall and winter, I don't have to work. And I know that Les is putting us back on the air next summer. You know, it's like they're annuities. I call them annuities and they obviously enriched a lot of people.
You know, you
except
have a real...
Except the talent.
Yeah.
Except the talent. Did I forget that? I tailed off there for a second. Yeah.
And you have a really great background story in terms of... I think very few people probably know in terms of when you were first coming up out here.
Yes.
About that there's somebody else that... a person that we know throughout all of these shows that we cover that you had a an interesting background with. Could you talk about that?
Well, yeah, it's you know, as we were talking, and you know, I was Survivor superstar Jonathan Penner's personal assistant.
Yes,
for him and his wife. And the story behind
what,
that was,
how, well, like, what year is this?
Okay, so this is 1996.
Yeah,
ish. Maybe 1997. So the story goes, my friend, this girl, she was working for Jason Alexander,
mm-hmm.
and from Seinfeld. And so Jason Alexander's sister-in-law was nominated for an Academy Award for a short film
mm-hmm.
she had done. And she was an up-and-coming young female director. And they were looking for an assistant.
Yeah.
So my friend was like, yo, go be the personal assistant. Because I'm like, I don't know anything about being a personal assistant. Like, go be the personal assistant. How hard can it be? You know, I do it. And she'll probably put you in a movie or something.
Yeah.
An aspiring actor. So Jonathan Penner was a writer, and he was on a Showtime show. The name escapes me right now, as an actor. And I was the worst personal assistant in history. I was disorganized.
All right, Mike Boogie, I want you to go get me a cup of coffee. I want it black with two sugars. Where's the coffee?
Amazing impression. I gotta eat. Has he seen you do that?
He doesn't like it.
Oh,
I doesn't like it.
He's good. They're great people.
Yes.
Him and his wife, Stacy Tidal.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know them well. And they were great. I mean, one time, the best story was one time I went grocery shopping for them in their carload of groceries. I came in the house, forgot to unload the groceries, and went home for the night. And she called me Saturday morning, and she's like, Mike, do you really want to do this? Like, I get it. You want to be in a movie or something. She's like, I think I'm just going to get another assistant. I was like, I think you're right. I think that's a good move. So, yeah, right. The reality world
Boogie,
is very
get to step in.
Get to step in.
Yes.
Get our milk and yogurt in the car. But they came into my restaurant a couple years ago and brought their kids, which, you know, they were really young then.
Yes.
And so it's like weird to see them as adults, and now I'm the old guy. So yeah, I love Jonathan and Stacy.
Yeah, what a wild origin story.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a small incestuous world, and especially Los Angeles, there's such a high percentage of people that have been on reality
yeah.
shows.
And no connection in terms of then like Penner ultimately being on Survivor and you.
No. Yeah. I was actually really shocked he went on there.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was such a fan. And, you know, I had lots of Survivor connections along the way. One of my best friends was on Survivor Marquesas with one of my barbacks.
Who's that?
And Gabe was my barback.
Oh.
And Sean Rector was one of my best friends at the time.
Now, are you still friendly with Sean Rector?
Yes.
Oh,
Sean
wow.
Sean and I are great friends.
Yes.
And,
well,
and
please, that I'm gonna give you, you know, please give him my contact.
I will.
Because we, you know, I'd love to, like, I used to know him from way back when, but so many people would love to hear
Sean
from him.
Sean does amazing things, and,
he's so talented.
He's very talented, and he has a group I'd like to, you know, single out. It's called Boys to Men, and he teaches at inner city schools at this one school, and he teaches these kids manners. You know, they don't have fathers, most of them, in their life, and he'd, like, you know, teaches them how to respect women and themselves. And I've seen some of the kids come up through the program and I've gone there and spoke and stuff. And it's just, Sean's just a great guy because he.
And I don't know what he ultimately wanted to do, but I was always surprised that he didn't go on to have like this like incredible career. The guy was so talented, and he could sing, he could, you know, he could tell jokes.
You know, he went on at an interesting time as well. He went on in the spring of 2002. And it was like right after, 6 months after I had been on there. And, you know, it was sort of that, it was still monstrous, Finale Central Park and Rosie and gave them all cars and all that. But in terms of like an actor, it was like, that's right when it started being held against you that you had been on a reality show. And so I he was very talented, and it's kind of a shame he hadn't gone on there sooner.
Yeah. Anything else that you want to say about Big Brother, Big Brother 17?
No, I just, you know, everybody, when will they be able to listen to this?
Probably I'm going to have it up on Sunday.
Okay, great. So everybody out there, thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the grand finale. May the best player win. And it's been another distinct pleasure being here with Rob.
I always like to give a hashtag at the end of these things. What's the hash? I know you don't like social media.
What? Hash. Hashtag game theory.
Game theory.
She says game theory one more time.
Yeah, she said game, like game theoretically speaking.
Yeah, it's yeah. like a verb, it's a noun, it's a one word, it's two words. But the girl deserves to win, and I hope she does. Vanessa Russo, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, well, it is always a pleasure to see you. Is there any of your places you want to promote?
Yeah, I got a great restaurant in Studio City for local listeners. It's called Cocina Condesa. Condesa is a hip part of Mexico City. It's mm-hmm. Mexican street food. There's lots of light stuff on the menu if you don't want the refried beans. It's doing really well. And I have a sports bar called The Woodman in Sherman Oaks, California. So if you're a local listener or in town visiting, stop by and see us and we'll talk some reality television.
All right. Good stuff. Mike Boogie, always a pleasure. We'll be live. We've got our shows 9:15 p.m. Sunday after the episode and then finale coverage of Big Brother. It's the big premiere and finale night. We're going to have our Survivor Know-It-Alls at 9:45 p.m. And then we'll get to Big Brother coverage 12:30 Eastern coming up on Wednesday night.
Tune in. Don't miss it.
Rob is website.com. All right, everybody. Have a good one. Talk to you again soon. Bye.